Hello and welcome to the Fit for Privacy podcast, the podcast for those who care about privacy. I'm your host Puneet Bhatia, and here we have conversations with industry leaders about their perspectives, ideas and opinions relating to privacy and data protection matters. Before we start, a quick disclaimer that the views and opinions expressed are not legal advice. So let's get started. Hello and welcome. Today we have a special and unique guest. Somebody who solves complex problems, is motivated to transform lives, and has the highest aspirations to live bravely and positively, and also to influence how we care for one another across the world. And this is the philosophy he lives with, and he has a background that covers technical, clinical, and healthcare roles, and he's also been in civil engineering. And I'm talking about none other than Scott Walker. So welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Puneet. It's wonderful to be with you.
So tell me, what's your story to start with? That is, how did you, or when did you hear about data privacy? I know in healthcare and everywhere we talk about privacy, but when was the first time and how did you come into touch with data privacy?
Sure. It's very, very important field, especially across all industries, but especially within the healthcare sector. So as a program manager of healthcare IT, information technology, sharing data in the interoperability, population health, and public health space in the United States, obviously, there are tremendous considerations specific to privacy that have to be considered, and coupled with a multidisciplinary approach, including not only privacy, information security, compliance, legal, data integrity, health information management. It's a very rich and important topic in the healthcare landscape, privacy really driving how we treat consumers across all industries, but specifically within the health sector, is very much focused on keeping that data safe and timely and usable.
Makes sense. And I'm sure that when you were in the privacy field or in the healthcare field, you would have heard about the word GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. And when you hear that word, what's the one word that comes to your mind when you think about GDPR? And why does that word matter?
Sure. Great question. To me, thinking of GDPR, immediately I think of rights. So as consumers, we have to, as the name implies, those general data protection regulations, we have to really focus on protecting consumers across all industries by regulating that personal data. So making sure that all rights in an equitable, diverse, and inclusive way are being considered as it relates to the sharing of our personal protected information.
Makes sense. Wonderful. That's a very inclusive way of looking at it. And what called you to also shift focus from other things, that is healthcare and civil and all those dimensions you are in, also into privacy? I mean, what keeps you interested in supporting this work, this field of privacy? Because if I understand, now you are based in the Netherlands, right?
That's correct.
So you moved from US to Netherlands. So maybe help us understand what was the motivation that made you move from there to here, and how healthcare, operational efficiency, and the privacy that you talk about fit into each other.
Sure. Yes. I was serving in a health system, a top five health system that had won this designation in the United States for the last 7 years. It was a smaller system. It was a nonprofit, six hospital system with about 150 physician-owned practices and an affordable care organization that was really focused on shared savings, more of a value-based healthcare model. This was very much aligned with my values. However, as true with so many industries, healthcare, especially in the United States, is becoming very centralized and consolidated. So we were in the midst of a major acquisition, going from a nonprofit healthcare system to a for-profit healthcare system. And this prompted me to really look inward and actually go back to school for a Master's of Health Administration degree program at the Milken Institute School of Public Health in Washington, D.C. And part of that curriculum, we were required to do a international health system analysis and came over to the Netherlands, studied the healthcare system, and recognized that Europe, much more than the United States, is moving in that direction of value-based healthcare. So this is really the catalyst of change that brought us over to the Netherlands, was that experience in seeing how healthcare is administered beyond the disease care system that I've, you know, been exposed to in the United States. So it's been a privilege to be here and to learn so much in participating on multiple levels, including supporting a European think tank that's based out of Brussels. It's the Center for European Policy Studies. We were privileged to serve on the new industrial strategy for Europe, specifically the Data and Digital Economy Work Group. And that really gave us a clear understanding about, you know, policies that are driving GDPR now and in the future. So it's been very inspiring to see the important work that is happening in the privacy landscape across the EU.
And you touch upon a lot of things, the data, the healthcare, the GDPR or the privacy, and then we also have the other new technologies or emerging technologies. So how do you see these playing a role in the long-term vision that supports your long-term vision and allows you to create an impact, create work as you said, that you like to make an impact at a larger level?
Sure, yeah. The experience that I was able to draw from in serving in so many capacities in the United States, where we're exchanging data, I managed a health information exchange for one that had statewide and national interoperability, including with federal entities like the Veterans Administration, the Department of Defense, the CDC, so many state and federal regulatory-driven requirements, and also other health systems exchanging data. So really looking at those data use reciprocal support agreements, the DRSA, which is a big data exchange standard in the United States. It's through the Sequoia Project's eHealth Exchange. So really starting to consider the importance of data exchange through the lens of privacy and that multidisciplinary approach that's so important, that starts at the patient, keeping the patient central in that equation, so that they are informed of their right to opt out from sharing their data, and also the value of participating within those data exchange programs. Some of that data exchange in the United States is regulatory required, such as one of the laws in the United States that's becoming more and more towards the front and center of these requirements is called the 21st Century Cures Act. And in that, there's provisions for information blocking in saying that, hey, you know, actually the patient are the owners of their data, and they're entitled to have that data. So really, how information, protected health information, be it in the United States through HIPAA or here in Europe through GDPR, how that data is exchanged safely and accurately, and it begins, so true within our work, it begins with building trust and relationships and setting those expectations for information that's going to be shared with whom, and also the stakeholder relationships and how that information is exchanged beyond the organization with other health systems, with state and federal entities, to make sure that you have protections in place in such adverse events as a breach. We saw across the world back in 2017 a ransomware of WannaCry that impacted over 150 countries, upwards of $4 billion worth of damage. So it's incredibly important when you start thinking at the patient level of how care is being impacted and how lives are being put at risk. These are not just ones and zeros. These are lives that are at stake, specifically in the healthcare field, but also across all industries.
I fully share your view. When we talk about data, especially personal data, by nature, personal data is personal. And when we are talking about personal data, we are talking about people. So we don't look at it as a business entity or business value. It is people that we are treating with when we are treating data. But let me ask you a question in that context. You say your heart knows the why. Run in that direction. That's a quote from Rumi, and you love it, or that's your favorite quote. And I ask, we say usually that now big tech has taken all our data and it's too late. What does your heart say? Is it too late, or it's still possible to regain control?
It's a beautiful reflection, Poonen. I really love that angle. And I would say I'm an eternal optimist. I see the world changing and so much light that is shining through. It's an opportunity, this new normal under which we're finding ourselves. It's a new opportunity for us in our humanity to start caring for and loving one another in ways that we haven't before. It's not about being a transactional world. It's about, as true with the value-based healthcare model, it's about that value equation that includes both costs, understood, but also about patient-reported outcome measures and patient experience specific to the healthcare arena. But of course, this holds true for all of us in all aspects of our lives and how we access the basic, our basic daily life needs. It's about making sure that there's equity and inclusivity. So this new age of our humanity, I feel that we're waking up to recognize that we all have rights in how our data is exchanged, more transparency, more consumer ownership. So I'm very optimistic for the future, especially as we move towards more and more access of how that information is being shared and with whom, and the ability to understand the consent model that's associated with how our data is shared and whether or not we want to participate or, you know, have our data protected in other ways as well.
Yeah, I think choice is the most important element here. You need to be having choices as regards whether you want to let the data be used for research. I'm talking in your context, that's in healthcare. Do you want to let your data be used for research or kept private? Most people would agree. But if they have a choice, then it's more transparent and it's more better approach. And also I follow a value-based system is the best system, but the question is how do we define value and what constitutes value? And that leads me to a similar question. We often say not in terms of value, but we often say in terms of compliance. So in your view, what is it, or what are the few things, criteria that we can put in place to differentiate between the work is compliant or say fit for privacy, or work is not compliant? What differentiates? What are the key factors from a user perspective? So patient visiting a healthcare or say hospital, what would he consider as criteria being compliant or not? Of course, we know all the regulator stuff, the GDPR stuff, but from a patient visiting a healthcare, or you as an operational efficiency person visiting, how do you define, differentiate privacy compliance from non-compliance?
Sure. Yeah. And I know specific to my experience within healthcare, there's a stratum of complexity that's associated where you know, the Hippocratic Oath compels us to first do no harm and then to do good for that patient that's being served. And there's an element of foundational trust there. Of course, we're becoming more educated consumers with the access of information, including adverse events, sentinel events where, you know, the patients have been actually injured or killed, and all of the waste that's associated within the healthcare industry. But all of those protections begin as a patient enters the system, either a healthcare system or a physician practice, a post-acute facility, whatever it may be, at the time of registration, where there is education surrounding the consent model. And that follows all the way through the entire experience for that patient when it pertains to the request for their information, the readiness of that information through a patient portal or other means, in being able to know that that data is protected and that there's data integrity, that it's accurate information, because we know such a great vulnerability within the healthcare landscape is care being informed by incorrect data, which very much happens. You know, all of these systems are so complex. These major electronic health record systems, they are prone to our humanity, and they're also prone to the vulnerability of so many changes that sometimes make them unstable or a deviance from standardization, where they're so customized that it becomes difficult to support and maintain. It begins with change management, making sure that that system is built on integrity and that there's reliance from all of the various contributing, participating entities that comprise that data. So making sure that there's standardization in the way that the health information is exchanged, mm-hmm. an agreement, and also making sure that there is a strong component of privacy, compliance, legal, all of these areas that feed towards the data integrity, the health information management, information security from a role-based access of that information, cyber defense for such attacks, as I mentioned, and then also the investigation of how that information's, where it's going to be shared and how. So having the governance, risk, and compliance to actually go and perform offsite investigations of security operation centers and making sure that there's a clear understanding and that you have the agreements in place that really honor the promises that have been made with that inference of trust for the patient to show up at that organization and know that not only will they be kept safe, but their protected health information will be kept safe as well.
That's very true. And since these are so many things to do, is there an opportunity that you see for standardization of data privacy or data compliance or privacy compliance practices, maybe across industries or even across nations? Do you see something like that in the need for it? I know having it politically is a challenge, but do you see that need? Do you acknowledge that need, feel that need?
Yes, I think this is a beautiful conversation, and the point that you bring up is so important to learn from a cross-industry understanding of best practices. So making sure that there's collaboration, as we've spoken of, specific to the healthcare sector. What we've done in the United States is, you know, in addition to conferences and accreditations and collaboratives, to really make sure that there are statewide, regional, statewide, and federal level collaboratives where there's an exchange of ideas and best practices and learning from, I know specifically here in the EU, as I mentioned, participating within the Center for European Policy Studies, the standardization that is so incredibly important, and the opportunities I feel are more rich here in the EU than the United States, because there is not a homogeneity across states of those driving regulatory requirements specific to privacy in the US. There's reliance at the state level, but then of course there's federal requirements as well. So here in the EU, I feel it's important to look at other areas, other countries, including the United States, to learn from what's happened successfully, but even more importantly, the lessons learned from the failures that have presented themselves so clearly through this pandemic, to say, okay, where foundationally have we gone wrong, and how can we improve on those vulnerabilities by learning to work smarter? The standardization is, it's really a systems thinking approach. So making sure that we're not getting lost in a process that hasn't considered the scenario planning of the larger impacts that could potentially impact the systems. And then also making sure that organizations are brave and bold enough to shift towards a learning organization model where there's this continual process improvement, being brave and vulnerable enough to say, how can we be open and flexible to change? And the work here, I know in the EU, is very progressive. It's inspiring to see more standardization, I think, than what I've personally witnessed in the United States. However, there is many gleaming examples in the United States that are shifting towards standardized data sets, trusted framework, and again, those standardized participation agreements, both for the exchange of data in a centralized way in a decentralized way, and how the data is maintained, exchanged, and then responded to if there's any breaches or an emergency situation where, as we would say in the United States, the glass has to be broken and that information needs to be accessed because of a significant inclement weather event, like in the United States, a hurricane or a tornado or a flood, where you want to care for those patients. So the balance that is transparent enough to say, actually, your information is going to be exchanged because there's regulatory requirements with such things as communicable diseases and syndromic surveillance like Ebola. So to your point of trust, it's incredibly important that the consent model, the education is there. And for data stewardship, where consumers are the owners of their data and they can have more reliance that trust is being honored by having the protections in place in numerous ways that keeps them safe and protected.
Interesting. And let me change the conversation to a little bit lighthearted conversation. So because that's the last part of our podcast, if I were to ask you to choose between privacy and security, what would you choose and why?
You know, honestly, my experience in the United States, which was heavily involved with that multidisciplinary governance approach to the exchange of data, not only within the organization that I served, but also across numerous external organizations, healthcare systems, state health information exchanges, federal entities, including the CDC. It's not possible, in my view, to not consider the entire system holistically. So you cannot look at privacy without information security. It's just not possible. You have to have consideration towards those policies, those procedures, the controls that are in place, not only from a compliance perspective that says we're honoring our own promises that have been made to the community internally, but then also in this ever-changing regulatory landscape, we're in compliance with those requirements from a compliance perspective. And all of it, in my view, sits on top of privacy. It's a global issue, privacy, across all sectors. So it's incredibly important to have an understanding, in my view, my humble view, and I know you, with your important work through Fit for Privacy, I've been so inspired to go onto your YouTube channel and listen to your podcast, the important work that you're doing, including, very interesting, I'm so excited to attend your privacy coffee house, just so much there. You're truly the expert. So I love your thoughts as well. But in my view, these are all fingers of the same hand. They're so incredibly important. That hand that is open in trust and transparency, where we know that we're going to remain safe and protected through that multidisciplinary approach to your question that includes both privacy and information security in concert.
I would share that view. And thank you so much for your kind words about the Privacy Coffee House and the Fit for Privacy work. But I'm equally amazed with the kind of work you're doing, not only in healthcare, but also in the leadership space, because I've been truly impressed with the kind of work you do. Because you don't look at it from a policy or a law or a compliance standpoint. You look at it from a perspective of touching humans. And that's the essence of our work. Because what we are doing, these laws or the policies, the procedures, the processes that we put in place, they are in the end for the people and making their lives better, not for any other reason. Like, privacy is a fundamental human right here in Europe. But that's the essence of it. And if I may ask you another question in context. So normally we say we need time, we need health, and we need the wisdom. So if you have to choose between the three, time, health, and wisdom, what would you choose and why? I know it's a different question, not to do with privacy, but it's just spontaneous.
No, it's brilliant, and I love it. I've heard it said that wisdom is not just the accumulation of knowledge, data, if you will, but also the shedding of ignorance. There's so much negative conditioning that we've been exposed to in our lives through our families, through our own experiences, historical traumas. I sit here in the old Jewish sector in the central part of Amsterdam, where approximately 170,000 Jews were pulled out during World War II and sent to concentration camps. There's a tremendous amount of unacknowledged historical traumas, cultural traumas, religious traumas, persecution, and, you know, just diminishing our light in so many ways. I think for me, the brilliant question, my answer would be more towards that aspect of wisdom that is clearing that corrupted operating system, that historical browsing, to clear that cache and to see the world through a different lens that sees us as all connected, as all family, not only through our humanity, but all life on this precious miracle that we're all sharing in together. So the sense of urgency that escapes so many, myself included, for much of my life, is better tempered against through the lens of wisdom. These moments, you know, ashes to ashes, we all fall down. There's only so much time for all of us. It's really how we meet these moments with compassion and kindness and humility and an openness to explore and learn and contribute, and how we support one another and heal some of these traumas within our own minds and hearts so that we can transform our world. It's these unhealthy behaviors that have created so much difficulty in the world, not only from a disease model, but also wars and conflict and genocide and, you know, humanitarian crisis and the difficulties that we've imparted on the earth and species and, you know, the quality of water and a lack of equity and inclusivity and diversity. We see ourselves through faulty views that limit ourselves and others and disconnect us from our humanity and from all life. So very much, I'm a fan of all of these areas that you speak of, but so much so, in I bow humbly to the wisdom that flows through you and the teachers that are all of us to, you know, meet one another in a loving embrace as family rather than, you know, standing on opposite sides because of the color of our skin or our sexual orientation or whatever it may be. We're all family, and we have an opportunity to transform the world by changing these behaviors that will eventually transform the faulty views, the faulty beliefs, and transform our culture as a humanity and a planet and whatever is beyond this.
Makes sense. And allow me to tap into your wisdom, because you talk about leadership from a different dimension. the data protection experts, or the DPOs as we call them, data protection officers, they have this challenging role, the challenging job of leading an organization through data protection compliance, having to deal with various stakeholders and to align with or understand different laws apart from the privacy laws. It's a complex job. So how would you guide if somebody was standing in front of you as a data protection officer from your leadership model perspective, saying do this or do these three, five, whatever things, or follow this framework? What would you tell them in 2 minutes if you had an opportunity?
I think it's important for us as leaders, all of us, to model the way in how we show up, from a place of integrity, from a place of openness, that essence of bravery, to be open, to view listening as an act of generosity, to be flexible. Therein lies the resiliency, is this place of humility and openness, flexibility. So my advice would be to look at how we are treating ourselves first, from a place that's mindful, emotionally intelligent, honest, living from a place of integrity, understanding what our values are. It's difficult to model the way when we're not living in accordance with our own values, or we don't even understand our own values. And to overlook that mindfulness, that emotional intelligence, that inner landscape being cultivated, that's really our life's work. If we're not honoring that, and it's difficult for us to address the necessary healings that are within ourselves and others to be a force for positive change in the world. And it's also difficult, I believe, to gain a clear understanding of vision, values, purpose, to really translate that to others if we're not doing it ourselves. We can't encourage the heart for others. We can't be a disruptor if we're conforming to a system that's broken. It's our responsibility to show up in a way that helps to transform ourselves in living out our own best version, but also inspires others to act, encourages others to lead themselves, their communities, and the world, and offering, you know, this outward oriented service. So it really starts in the first person context with honesty, integrity, and modeling values that ultimately organically unfolds and impacts others positively just by how we show up.
That's a lot of wisdom, and I would take the brave act of summarizing it into one sentence by saying, you are saying that know your values and follow them with integrity and courage while being transparent.
Beautifully stated.
So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your time with us. And if somebody would like to tap into your wisdom, that is, connect with you, and maybe for work purposes or for leadership purposes or even human purposes, how should they connect with you?
Thank you, Punit. I appreciate the beautiful discussion and the time that you've given. First, in who I am, I would also invite others to learn more about you, to learn more about Fit for Privacy and the important work that you have ventured into that is so incredibly important. I've been inspired to know you, to call you a friend, to learn more. I'm excited to go through your YouTube channel, and there's just so many podcasts that I feel like, wow, just really excited to attend the Privacy Coffee House and just deepen our friendship and our relationship. But then also, I guess for me, we are here in Amsterdam, and the company that I've co-founded is called AllBe, and it's pretty simple. It's just ALLBE.NL. That's who we are and where we can be reached.
Yeah, and I think you put it in a very humble manner, but I would say whether you have a work-related question or not, Scott is one of the most humble persons I've met. If you send him a message on LinkedIn or connect with him and have a coffee or a Zoom coffee or a virtual coffee with him, you'll be impressed with his wisdom and his leadership abilities, apart from, of course, his technical capabilities and compliance capabilities or operational capabilities. And you can always have a conversation with him because he's very responsive and very kind. So with that, I would say thank you so much, Scott, for your wonderful time that you have shared with us, the beautiful conversation, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Thank you, Poonen, and I, you, my friend.
Thanks for listening, and now we ask you for some help. Take a moment to subscribe and review this podcast. Your support matters. And if you have done it already, thank you so much. Now, if you have questions or suggestions, drop an email at hello@fitforprivacy.com. And finally, if you know someone who will benefit from this, share this podcast with them and help us grow. Thank you so much. Stay safe and see you next time.